In the fireside room this morning is Gene Sikink doing today's Bible study titled Zacchaeus the Tax Collector.
Zacchaeus, he was a chief tax collector and was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd he could not because he was short in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him, because he was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. So he hurried down and was happy to welcome him. All who saw it began to grumble and said, he has gone to become the guest of one who is a sinner. Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, look, half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back four times as much. Then Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and to save the lost. That's the story.
I'm kind of curious, he said, if I have defrauded him.
If I have defrauded him, didn't I get that in there? Okay. Well, thank you, that's pretty important. Qualification, thank you.
I hope you won't mind if I begin by bragging just a little about my hometown, Jericho. It is really an exceptional place to live. In Hebrew, Jericho means sweet fragrance or wonderful aroma. And some of my fellow Israelites who live next door, they even gave us a nickname. And in a land where there's a shortage of water and trees always, they call Jericho the city of palm trees. Now, I don't want to mislead you. Jericho was a nice place to live. But for me, my childhood, by the way, Zacchaeus, I found it very difficult to grow up in Jericho. At best, my life was bittersweet. You know, Jericho was like every town. On the upper Jericho, that's what they called it, that's where the rich folks lived. In lower Jericho, where the rest of us lived, you know, we just struggled to survive and to make it. Now, I think my problem in life started with Grandma Moses. When I was about 3 or 4 days old, lying in my mother's arms, Grandma Moses came in and looked and said, my, but he is a little fellow, isn't he? And like a proverbial noose around my neck, that thing about small stature has haunted me all my life. Can I help it that I'm 4'9"? That's just the way the good Lord made me. What could I do about that? But you know, in this world, it seems like there's always a bunch of bullies who are looking for little guys to pick on. And sure enough, 4 or 5 of them were kind of like a gang from Upper Jericho. They found me, Zacchaeus, and man, they made it, took after me. My life was hell on earth, to say the least. And they would make my life just absolutely very, very painful and very, very difficult. In those early days, I cried a lot. Fact is, I cried so much it was like there was a pain that went all the way through me. And this kind of overwhelmed me. There are a couple things that kind of saved me. Number one, I learned to run. If I could get a head start of those boys from Upper Jericho, they could not touch me. I could run like a deer. And secondly, I learned to hate. I had sort of a fantasy world about what I'd do to those bullies if I ever got them. I would first of all grab them and tie them up, and then I'd take a sword and I'd slowly cut their fingers off one by one. Then I'd cut their toes off, and then I might slice off an ear, and maybe slice off their nose. Or I'd start a fire and burn their house and be sure they were in the fire. Or I'd poison their food, or maybe I'd poison their water. Well, I had my fantasy world of hate. When I went into high school, or got a little older, it's like my hate burned all the tears out of me. And I no longer cry. Zacchaeus is a big boy. He doesn't cry anymore. But you know, I started to have a dream. I began to dream that someday I would have a house in Palm Street Avenue in Upper Jericho, the best in the whole country. And no one would ever look down on little Zacchaeus ever again. Well, when you are a tailor on Gaza Street in Lower Jericho, how in the world do you get enough money to pay for a house in Upper Jericho? Well, that problem was pretty imminent to me until one day there was a knock at my door and there was Cousin Ben. And we had the typical chit-chat, how's the weather, how's the family, and then he got right to the point. Zacchaeus, would you like to get rich? Wow! That was like music to my ears. I couldn't believe it. Okay, Ben, sounds good, but how do you do it? Well, you gotta collect taxes for the Romans. Ooh. Now, I need to fill you in a little politically on my world in which I've lived and grown up. Israel was conquered by the Romans 50, 60 years ago. And ever since I've been a little guy, that's all I've known, is the presence of the scourge of Rome. They always had their heel in the nape of our neck. And they kind of destroyed our soul little by little. And the biggest thing that they did was to collect exorbitant taxes. Every time you wiggled, there was a tax. And the way they would collect their taxes is they'd hire citizens of Israel to collect them and then pay them to the Roman coffers. And everybody knew, if you had used a little discretion, you could kind of skim off part of the tax for yourself. We just kind of knew that happened. Well, Ben, about 3 years ago, decided to get into it. And when he mentioned it to me, of course, I remembered that. He said, Zacchaeus, what do you think? Would you like to become a tax collector? I said, oh, Ben, you know, there are those times in life you got to decide. I go right, no, or I go right, yes. I said, I got to think this over. I can't decide on the spur of the minute. So Ben went home. I went to bed, but the truth is I hardly slept a wink. I tossed and turned all night. I didn't know what to do. It sounded so good and so appealing. Finally, about 4 in the morning, things kind of begin to sort out. First of all, somebody would collect taxes. If it weren't me, someone else would do it, right? So why shouldn't I, for the first time in my life, begin to win? Why shouldn't I be in the upper side of things and always, you know, the little guy who loses? Secondly, family is kind of a pain anyhow. So I didn't see my relatives, and I knew my parents had never stepped foot in my house again. That would be the end of it if I collected for Rome. But I decided, and Ben said they had a lot of friends among Republicans, so he got along quite well. And anyhow, it would be awfully nice to have a house in Upper Jericho. And I'd finally succeed. So, even against some of my better feelings, I decided to go along. And Ben, good to his word, was right there, 8 o'clock sharp. Well, Zacchaeus, what did you decide? Excuse me. Well, Ben, I thought of it all night. I've been wrestling with it, and I decided to go with it. I'm going to collect taxes just like you do. And Ben was overjoyed, gave me a great big Israelite hug, you know, and said, you did the right thing. You just wait and see. You'll be glad that you did it. Well, 3 days later, I was at the east gate of the city collecting taxes. And Ben was right. It went quite well. About a year to the day that Ben visited me, guess what I had? A wonderful home in Upper Jericho on Palm Street Boulevard. The best boulevard in town. And I had gold and I had jewelry. I had sumptuous meals. I had a swimming pool in the backyard. I had a gorgeous garden. I had servants. Zacchaeus had finally succeeded. Life was perfect. Right? When you get everything you need, you're happy, right? Well, one day I was in my tax booth and who should come up but Ben. And he said, Zach, I just had an incredible experience. What happened? Well, I was over on Gaza Street and I met this man. His name is Jesus and he's from some podunk town called Nazareth. But he's incredible. Well, what's so great about him? Well, he preaches like some kind of rabbi. And you know how you sometimes wonder about how to get your life straightened out? Well, he can teach you about how to put your ducks in order so you can, you know, make it in this life. But not only that, I saw a crippled man with an arm all gnarled up. And this Jesus healed it. And the man put his arm out straight as a whistle. And then Ben is gone. I thought, I gotta see this guy. Well, I finished my tax collecting for the day and put my portable tax booth. And I wandered over to Gaza Street, but he was gone. Oh, they said, yeah, he'd been here, but about an hour ago he left. Well, what do you do? Zacchaeus the loser, one more time, right? Well, I went home and I kind of forgot about him. And about 3 months later, I was collecting my taxes. Oh, by the way, I used to skip just a little. If you used discretion and weren't an idiot about it, Rome didn't mind if you kind of skimmed off a little off the top and they wouldn't say a word. So I got to, I gouged quite a few people, and how do you think it made it to Upper Jericho? Well, of course, that did help. Well, another day I was collecting taxes per usual, and here comes Ben again, yelling at the top of his voice, Zach! Zach! What? But he's coming down Gaza Street, your street. This Jesus fella, you'll be here in about a half hour. And he was gone. I thought, this time I'm not going to miss this fellow. So I looked around. I put away my tax booth so I'm in a safe place. Now remember, in a crowd, when you're 4'9", all you see and feel is elbows and the backs ahead of you. So I began to look for a place that I could get an elevation to, you know, so I could see this Jesus and not be stymied by the crowd. Well, just down the street, I spied a great big sycamore tree. Aha! Zacchaeus isn't that dumb. I thought if I pulled myself up those lower branches, I'd have a really wonderful view, so I did. I climbed up and I tried to hide behind the leaves, and even as I got my perch, I could hear the commotion of the crowd coming down the street. And there they were. But you know, surprise, this Jesus looked like an ordinary son of Abraham. He wasn't so different. In fact, is he just like you and me? Amazed. And who should be walking beside him but Ben? And they're walking right toward my tree. Oh, and Ben is pointing. I feel like an elephant sitting up there in that tree. And you know when you get nervous, your ears get red? Ooh, mine are beet red. I felt like a total fool. And they stopped under the tree, and Jesus looks up and says, Zacchaeus, Ben has been telling me all about you. I'd like to get to know you. Why don't you come down from that tree and we'll go to your house tonight and have supper? You know, in Upper Jericho. I right away said, sure, Jesus, I'd like to do that. So I was going down the tree, and in my haste to get down, my foot slipped, and I, like a juvenile klutz, I fell to the ground with a great big thump, you know, and laid there like an idiot. And Jesus walked over, and he didn't laugh. He just walked over and said, hey, Zacchaeus, are you okay? Can I help you up? By that time, it was late afternoon, and all the people were pretty much going home to have supper, join their family. So Jesus and I walked a half mile to Upper Jericho and went to my house. The meal went off without a hitch. It was wonderful. My servants outdid themselves, and everything was just the way you'd like it when you're trying to impress somebody. Well, you know how it feels when you have a friend in your house that cares about you? How good that makes you feel? You know, he was the first son of Abraham to ever be in my house since I collected taxes, other than tax collectors, but they don't count. And it made me feel so good that someone said, he liked me. Or he felt good to be with me. And Jesus hardly said a word, you know, yes, no, kind of grunt once in a while. And I talked like a neurotic parrot. I just chattered and chattered and chattered and went on and on and on. You know what happened? The more I talked, the worse I felt. I could see I was a cheat. I began to see I was a thief. I began to feel like a traitor that I was. It finally got so bad, you know, I was just full of this conviction and guilt. I stood up and I just blurted out, Jesus, I tell you, everybody I've robbed, I'll give all that money back to the poor, to the orphan and the widow. So help me, Jesus, I'll do it. And if I've gouged somebody and stolen from them, and I know their name, I'll go look them up and I'll repay them four times that I took. And believe me, Jesus, I still have a conscience. I still have some integrity, and I'm going to do it. I won't cop out. Then a man who had forgotten how to do it at midnight began to cry. And I cried some more. I couldn't look at him. I just put my head down the table. I'm just so ashamed of the kind of monstrous human being I'd become. And there was a long silence. And then I felt Jesus' gentle hand laid on my shoulder. And I looked up at his gentle, beautiful, loving eyes, his brown eyes. And then he said, Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus, I'm really proud of you. You've done a brave thing tonight. You know, Zacchaeus, salvation has come to this house. And you are once again restored back into the covenant of God's chosen people. Congratulations, my friend. And that was about it. He left my house. But you know, several things happened to me after that. Number one, I realized all the folks in Upper Jericho had it wrong. Their formula was, the more you get, the happier you'll be. That was mine too. But after I met Jesus, I realized that's totally backwards. Because it's just the opposite. The more you give, and give and give, that's when the happier you'll be. I gave to the widows, I gave to the orphans, I gave fourfold back to the people I'd wronged. And you know what? For the first time in my life, I felt clean. Excuse me. I felt happy. I felt good about myself. I felt good about life. Well, a couple days ago, a man from Jerusalem stopped and told me some really bad news. Apparently, after Jesus saw me in Jericho, he had gone on to Jerusalem and got in hot water with the powers that be. And they took him before the Sanhedrin, they arrested him, and then took him before the Sanhedrin. They judged him guilty of death, took him before Pilate, and got it pushed through Pilate, put him on a cross in Friday, and he's dead. He's gone. I couldn't believe it. My new friend, all of a sudden, dead and gone. But you know, I'm so glad that before Jesus went to Jerusalem, he stopped at Jericho to see a kind of a hopeless human being named Zacchaeus. And because he did that, I now know what it means. Jesus came to seek and to save that which was lost. Thank you, my friends, for letting me share my story with you this morning. Now, if you don't mind, aren't embarrassed, I'll address before you, all right? But that's one way to view Zacchaeus. Where's my zipper? Here it is.
You're welcome.
See, usually my wife is always here to help me dress and undress. She'll be here next week.
But the right kind of music, we could have a real kind of a dance.
Pardon me?
If we had the right kind of music, we could have a real dance.
Well, I'm going to be doing a Bible study like this Monday through Friday, and I need someone to help me read some scripture passages, just like Erling did this morning, for Tuesday. Would someone volunteer to read the passage on Tuesday and the rest of the week?
I'll be happy to.
Okay.
Miriam?
Hand that to Marion. Tuesday I'll be doing Kiffles. And there's several passages we'll look at. Simon and Serene is on Wednesday. Anybody willing to do that? On Wednesday?
I'll be gone.
Okay. I can wait till the day. Early I'll let you do it on Wednesday.
Okay.
And then Thursday and Friday, I'll just wait till we get there, and then we'll take care of that at that time. As far as myself, my name is Gene Sicking, and I came from the plains of South Dakota, and then I went to seminary in 1956, and was ordained in 1960. And I've been in the Lutheran ministry for about 36 years. And the story writing, the monologues, kind of came to me in, about my last 30 years or so. I used to do them for Lent. You know, I'd do Dismas, and I'd do Peter, Judas, you know, various people. And then with Barb willing to help me, I did a couple dialogues. We did Mary and Joseph, and we did Naomi, the mother-in-law of Ruth, so we take two women then. I don't act out women's parts very well. And then we did the Emmaus Walk, and I'm going to do that on Friday with Lola, if she's able to help me. Now, I have this little smile face means I have my joke for the morning, so now you got to smile when I tell my joke. How many charismatics does it take to put in a light bulb? How many charismatics does it take to put in a light bulb? Only one, because her hands are already in the air. Oh, come on, that's not that
bad. Can't you think of a better one?
How many Lutherans does it take to change a light bulb?
Yeah.
Okay, how many?
10. One to change the bulb, the other 9 to sit around and say how much they miss the old one.
I just had these out, not the pipe. These are the Bible study sheets for today. We're going to work on Zacchaeus. 1, 2,
like
a third. I don't have pencils, and you don't really have to write anything down unless you'd like. We'll just kind of play that by ear. I'm going to ask us all to look at question number 4 to begin with. We're just going to describe Zacchaeus. You don't have to write it down. Just do it off, fire it off in kind of spontaneous way. What are a couple of qualities you think you would likely discover in the man Zacchaeus were you privileged to meet him? Anybody? What spontaneous reaction?
Short.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously short.
No, sharp.
Well, sharp. Oh, yeah. Oh, I think he was probably a very sharp guy. I have a hunch. I had down polite. I think he'd be a polite guy. Anybody else? What would he be like? I also had down insecure. I think he was insecure. His height, you know, kind of questioned over the years.
He wanted to get ahead.
Yeah.
Scheming.
Scheming. Very good. You don't get where he did without some, you know, manipulate, right?
Streetwise, same thing. Streetwise.
Yeah, I'd say in order to survive, he became very sharp.
Yeah.
Know how to play the odds, play the ropes, right?
Loner.
Oh, I would definitely guess that, yeah. Tax collecting made him a loner, and I think he probably was that way anyhow. Mm-hmm. Good guess. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go on to question 3. Let's all look at question 3. Jesus said, by the way, I did some of this in serendipity, so I owe credit to some of that Bible I studied. Today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. Now what was Jesus trying to say? A, something like a new birth had happened. B, Zacchaeus was again proudly claiming the greatness of his Jewish heritage. C, Zacchaeus had been thinking about, giving up his tax business for a long time, and Jesus offered him the needed courage to pull it off. D, like all of us, Zacchaeus was a combination. He was both saint and sinner. E, Given time, he would be able to offer restitution to all he had been guilty of robbing. Or any other thoughts? Why don't you go back over then, kind of a little moment of rereading it, and then just sound off of the one that hit you that you kind of like.
Well, I like D.
B like boy?
No, D like dog.
D, okay.
Yeah, right.
Like, go ahead.
Because I think many of us are tempted, and sometimes we fall over the edge.
You bet.
Yeah. And Zacchaeus certainly did. Uh-huh. A little bit at a time, and then all of a sudden, wow, there he was.
Luther used to say, simul justus et peccator. We're simultaneously saint and sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe that describes the human condition quite often. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you're right. Zacchaeus probably had a little bit of that too. We don't know much about his faith life, but he was a Jew. He went to a synagogue probably every Saturday, so.
I like A.
Something like a new birth that happened to him. Yeah, that was my choice too. I thought A was the best. That really it was like a grand turnaround for him.
Mm.
And I maybe made that a little strong in my mind along, but I just happened to think that it probably was like that.
Mm.
I kind of had all of the above, but I liked A the best.
Yeah.
All of them seemed to have a... Go ahead. Somebody else? All of them seemed to have a grain of truth about him. You know, probably, possibly true. Maybe he did give up tax collecting. We don't know about that. Do you think he did?
Well, how could he live with it?
After that, you
know. Yeah, after that, he couldn't live with it.
Yeah.
So he moved back down to the valley.
Back to Lower Jericho?
Yeah, right. Sold his house.
Do you think he would give up his house?
Well, I don't know how great that conversion was.
He may have had to.
He had to. He couldn't afford to stay.
That could be true.
Yeah, he couldn't afford to stay up there.
Necessity dawned.
Yeah. Or maybe he kept his job and was an honest tax collector.
Oh.
Well,
yeah. The taxes were going to be collected anyway.
That's true.
But did honest tax collectors live in the Street of Palms?
In Upper Jericho?
Yeah. That's a question we don't know what answer to, but... Could he still maintain his status?
My hunch is that anybody collected the taxes but not considered honest and not considered admirable. So I know the Israelite political setting. I don't know. I think you're right on, Lola, that it probably could have been that way.
Maybe he became a Robin Hood and he'd skim from the rich and give to the poor.
That would be an interesting
All
way
right,
to go.
Let's go for it.
I have to rewrite this and add that.
What does E mean?
E. Given time, he would be able to offer restitution to all he'd been guilty of robbing.
Given time meaning if he kept on working?
No, I just thought it took him time to recollect all that he had done. You know, he wouldn't have those records all at his fingertips.
No.
So he may take a few months to get that straight. That's what I was thinking.
He must have stored up a little bit.
Oh, I don't think so. From what I can tell, the whole history I've read and researched, those tax collectors did very well and they skimmed a lot. From what I can gather, and I could have it wrong, you know, my history is a little bit scanty. Anybody else? Any more on three?
Do you think that he could ever have moved down to Lower Jericho and been accepted? Since he had been a tax collector?
Boy, that's a good question.
Maybe he was an outcast for life. He didn't belong up, he didn't belong on the hill, and he didn't belong down in the Lower Jericho. And this is what happens to us when we put our faith on the line and we profess our faith. We don't belong. Sometimes we're outcast by everyone, every place, and we stand alone. That's why it's so hard to be a Christian.
Yeah, Barbara's observed that sometimes the stance of ministry, most of the time we preachers are treated very good and you know, we're affirmed by the people surrounding us.
Right.
But technically speaking, we're not with the crowd anymore. If we have some authenticity, we are over against so much of the society. Not that they're bad and we're good, but we're just in two different worlds.
Yeah, and not only preachers, but I think lay people, we all face that.
Yeah, if you have
In fact, we have less support than you do.
Because
you have your congregation.
Yeah.
You know, you
and
have your
collar.
Phone and the collar.
And the collar, yeah.
Yeah, and the collar. Undoubtedly the collar.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. You know, let's look at that. In other words, the price of an authentic witness in today's world, or any day's world, we happen to be in 98. Do you really think it is? Do you cut your throat in it boats? Really? More or less, huh?
That's why many of us back off. We're afraid. We're afraid to witness in the job market, in the job place, in the schools. We're afraid to witness to our neighbors.
I'm trying to think of what monologue that is, but I have the question, has fear become the primary motive that's ruling the church today? Because I think a lot of us are, we really are cold, but we act that way because I think we're
protecting ourselves.
We don't want to say anything.
Yeah.
We might make waves.
Yeah.
And then they wouldn't like us, or like you say. I think that's a real.
Well, in the workplace, they'll call it harassment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you hang a cross over your desk and you'll be talking to the man.
Mm-hmm. The manager, the CEO.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that too, that's why we're so hard on the Jehovah Witnesses. I mean, I think it's just what they're doing, I'm not buying their message, but what they're doing and they're witnessing is really right out in front.
It's gutsy.
And yes, it's gutsy.
Yeah.
And because we don't do it, we don't do it that way, you know. I mean, they're a real threat to us because we feel like they're one ahead of us, or, you know, what are they doing that for, blah, 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 you know, irritating me in my front door and whatever.
Same with the Mormons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Same way with the Mormons.
I lived in Eastern Oregon. There was about at least a third Mormon. My first call was there. And, you know, I observed that it was my observation that when these young men came around, it's always young men.
Seems that way, yeah.
Came around, people, although they may have some feelings against Mormonism, they respected these men because they were young and generally treated them very decently. Say, well, here's some young guy. And that is something. The young men, when they could be, you know, out doing this or that or the other thing, and they're giving up a year at least of their lives. And I think that people tend to listen to them a bit more. Of course, they have their prepared stuff, and they sit down and show you.
They have to go at that age, 18 to 19, if they're going to get into one of the orders. Yeah. That's the age they go.
Well, yeah.
It's like an internship.
But it's mandated, right?
Oh, yes, it's mandated, very much so.
Yeah.
Right.
And they have to wear white shirts and ties.
Yeah,
and
we saw them in northern Thailand.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. And I suppose one of the most famous is this pro basketball player. Who was a big 7'6"?
Christian Leitner?
No, he played 1 year for Brigham Young, and then he went out for 18 and 19 for missionary, and then he came back in the pros. And he's with Dallas now. He's, you know, there are a lot of them. Danny Ainge.
Well, Stephen, the quarterback for San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, he's Mormon. That's right. And his great, 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 great grandfather was young. Brigham.
Right.
Oh, really?
He's from the Mormons. Right.
No, they're very dedicated and committed, right? And they have ranches. I have to tell one story on that. They came around to Northfield, and we weren't, you know, very enthused. But then I made the mistake. I said, we're happy where we are, but there's a family 4 or 5 doors down. Don't ever do that. I mentioned that. Don't do that. The family 4 or 5 doors down was not happy because these people kept coming back and coming back because they had heard that maybe there was a need.
They hounded them, right?
Yeah. But they're very dedicated, that's right.
And, and Marion made the point that Zacchaeus, by this repentance, would alienate both sides, the wealthy and the poor. And I would like to bring out the point that there may be, you know, Jesus was effective, and there were other people that were doing this as well. And those people would tend to come together and support each other.
That's true.
And you see this in the churches that we've been talking about. Support each other in their church, in their own community.
Yeah.
I think we're so afraid of rejection too. I think we have to remember, I forget all the time that not everybody really accepted Jesus by a long shot, despite who he was and his witnessing.
Some of them said no.
Well, they said no, but they crucified him for that matter.
I, you know, if you don't mind my thinking ahead, Caiaphas, I portray him as a dilemma. Was Caiaphas right or was he right, you know? And because some said no, some turned it down. Yeah, that is a real interesting question. I thought it's an interesting question too. It's kind of a personal thing, but you know, you can share as much as you feel comfortable. When did you first meet Jesus? Analyze the key. Where was it? Were you young? Were you older? Were you up a tree? Were you out on a limb? Were you at your house? Anybody feel comfortable to share a little bit of your spiritual journey? Because I really feel all we have is our story. That's about all we really have. And a friend is someone who shuts up long enough to let you tell your story. Anybody want to share just a little snippet of where you were and when you met Jesus, like Zacchaeus did in a very convincing, convicting sort of time?
Go ahead.
Some of us, it was a gradual process, so gradual that you can't identify a place or time.
Yeah.
And that it's sort of like maturity.
Yeah. See, that's with my wife, Barbara. She had no glimmer of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
She was giving Bible studies and she was in first grade. Can you imagine that? But she's all right otherwise. She's quite
precocious child.
She did it very little and very seldom, but she did do it. You know.
Yeah.
And yeah. Anybody else concur with Phil that it's kind of a gradual
process? I blocked off Mary.
That's okay. I wanted to share I agree with Phil, there isn't any one given place, but the most dramatic thing that ever happened to me and in my faith happened when I was exercising on the floor. I was doing my morning exercises, and I was laying there after my exercises doing a meditation.
Sure.
And Christ suddenly appeared. It was only the lower half of his robe and his feet and his sandals, and that's all I saw. But it was so, I mean, I'll never forget the feeling. I mean, this bright light, you know? And of course, I was on the floor, so it was obvious that that's all I would see. I wouldn't see the whole figure, because I didn't look up, it was so bright. But there was something that went through me like electricity. And I will never forget that, never. And I keep dipping back into that for reaffirmation, for strength when I am really, you know, I really feel like I'm out there on a limb. And for me, it wasn't necessarily a turning point, but it was a reaffirmation, and it was just a real strong image. Just wonderful.
Oh.
This happened about
thanks for sharing that,
15 years ago.
Yeah. Anybody else have something similar or different you'd like to share, part of your story?
Well, I don't know if I should tell it, but it's a very negative one. I mean, I grew up, you know, nothing but Norwegian Lutherans, and they have all
the rest.
You all know what Kenyon is.
Yeah, I know about Kenyon.
And I was chair of the committee to decorate the gym for the prom. And I found out later that I got that job not because I had any special talent, but because my dad had a pickup truck that I could drive around town and do the things. So I was very active in this, and my dad was very much of a leader in the church and all the rest of things. And the night before the prom, the minister called me in, and we had lower lights and we had all the rest of these things. And I was 16 years old and, you know, very vulnerable. And we talked for a while. And then finally, to make a long story short, he said, Erling, if you love Jesus, you won't go to the prom.
Oh,
yeah.
Word.
And I didn't quite know what to make of that. And I went home, and my dad was president of the congregation and all the rest, and we talked it over. And in a way, that was the good part of it, because by the time you're 16, 17, you start moving away in some areas, you know, from your father and all these things. And I went to the prom. And among other things, my date had sold her gown herself, you know, and all sorts of things. And I shared this once, you know, in our history department, and there was one of my colleagues who grew up in Elroy, Wisconsin. And the minister there had stood in front of the door at the gymnasium with his arms out and tried to keep his kids out.
Oh, my.
And it took a while, you know, to sort of come to terms with that, because yeah. I was, you know, talk about laying on a Lutheran guilt trip if you ever want.
Yeah.
people who don't know what a Lutheran guilt trip is, you know, there it was.
Yeah.
But I went anyway, and I had a good time. Uh-huh. And my dad was...
How did your pastor react to when you saw next time?
Didn't say a word to
did
dad.
Did he know you were there?
Yes.
Oh, was he standing there?
Is that a subject like it was closed?
No, he didn't stand there, but he knew who was there.
Was it like the subject was closed after that? He never brought it up again?
What he wanted was sort of a big dramatic statement that Erling says he's going to testify and witness that he's not going to the prom. And then Ruth, my wife, had grown up in a very strict Lutheran background. Hers was Missouri, and she had been taught that dancing was vertical intercourse.
Yeah.
And that was
way up there. Holy
cow. Mm-hmm.
So, isn't that something that always
strong?
I call it 1 to 10. One means it's harmless, and 10 means it's vertical intercourse.
Right.
You know, it's so awesome and terrible. You know,
right.
I think that's sort of the history of our Lutheranism, where we arrange ourselves on that kind of scale in a way. And, I don't know, there's a lot of interesting, kind of pathetic stories when you think about them as to...
And you know, you carry all this luggage with you all through your life. You keep trying to shed these things you were raised with. You know that they're not correct, they're not to the, you know, to where you're at. But that old luggage is still there, and you have to address it, and you have to get it to a point where, you know, it doesn't get in your way, but it's always there. It's
when I was a chaplain in a hospital, we had a kind of mini lecture. Our supervisor would give us little talks once in a while, and he talked about family scripts, and that's what I call that.
Yeah.
You're scripted to be left out. I mean, it isn't up here in the head. You don't ever say, I want to be left out as a child. But about 3, 4, 5, or 6, you make a choice of your role, and it's usually at your feeling level, your subconscious, and you're the star, you're the clown, you're the left out, you know, things like that. And he talked about when you want to change your family script, first of all, you got to be aware of it. You know, what's the luggage I'm carrying?
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, you got to make a conscious, really strong choice, like Zacchaeus. I'm going to leave this life.
Yeah.
And that's the family doesn't know what to do with you. Because you're supposed to be the caretaker. What are you doing running around not doing anything? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Or you're supposed to be the clown. Why don't you joke anymore? You know.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
We carry that luggage, and sometimes it's hard. I think the hardest thing on earth is to change lifestyle.
Yes, it is.
You know, I was on the heart unit as the chaplain, and we talk about type A personality, you know. And you'd be very gingerly about, you know, bringing that on or ending the conversation, because if the person wasn't ready to face that, that was a little bit much. It'd be like guilting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were ready to face it, then you pose the question, well, would you like to change your lifestyle?
Mm-hmm.
Holy geshmoy, that is difficult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like to use your term, to let the luggage go.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask, really, do you think the minister gave you that admonition or because he felt that you were able to accomplish that and you were going to be a... It wasn't that
he wanted something bold and dramatic. And
would he have given this advice to anyone, or did
no,
he think that you were more likely to do it?
I should have explained that. One of my dad is president of the congregation, and I was president of the Luther League.
Yeah.
And I was already signed up for St. Olaf, and I was talking in the ministry.
Oh.
So I was knowing that. that's
yeah.
He wouldn't have picked on one we had boy called Stubb Vogan. Stubb was short like Zacchaeus,
yeah.
Right?
I bet you weren't too tall yourself.
No, I see, that's a very good point.
Right. Plus the fact you had a truck.
And I had a truck. Endorsed his hardware, right?
Yeah.
You never told him you had a truck.
Well, he knew, because I've been driving around truck doing all these
things.
In Kenyon, you know everything about everybody, right?
Oh, that's
right.
Oh, man. Well, that's a good point, Jeff.
Let's go to question one. One more question, then we'll maybe put the Bible study away. What's the reason Jesus suggested supper at Zacchaeus' house? A, he felt pity for poor, hopeless Zacchaeus. B, he wanted to discuss Zacchaeus' questionable business practices. C, he needed to do something dramatic to win over the town who were still feeling skeptical about Jesus. D, he knew he could help Zacchaeus find a new kind of life or another possible option.
E. I vote for E.
E. Other possible reasons?
Yeah.
What is it?
I think he was trying to make a dramatic social statement that even the least of these or most reviled are able to be saved and are, you know, children of God.
Valuable.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I took E also. Anybody else have a gander on number one?
Well, I definitely feel that Jesus sought Zacchaeus. He went to find him, you know, with the messenger.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, man is hypothetical. I just put that in there. But there must have been some context.
There must have been some reason that he heard enough to climb up that tree.
Okay, good point. Your first name again was?
Lois.
Lois, thank you.
Well, climbing up the tree was rather dramatic.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Adults don't climb trees, you know that.
Right.
Only kids.
Right. Wrong or right?
Right. Kids only climb trees. Adults ought to climb trees more often.
I agree.
But they don't.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, Robert, I have matins on Wednesday, and I'm going to read Robert Fulghum's story about climbing trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all ought to have our own tree.
I think it's such a sad day when children lose the, we grow up, quotes, and we no longer like fairy tales, and we no longer climb trees, we no longer make up songs.
Yeah,
you know?
We lose our creativity.
We used to have a fellow here who would come and show us how to fly kites. That was fun.
When we were here 25 years ago, they were building model airplanes.
Right. Yeah, well, that is a world tour.
Oh, my children never forgot that. Yeah, they loved it. And for the evening worship, guess what was flying in the worship?
Oh, yeah.
In this huge hall, our airplanes, my kids' airplanes. Dad, that's my plane. It was a moving moment. Yeah.
Moving, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, but
I was going to say, I'm going to go in and part for D. Because a new kind of life, because he says salvation is yours today.
Yeah.
And by salvation, he didn't mean, you know, eternal life or something else like that, but the kingdom is here. This is a sign of the kingdom. And obviously Jesus believed in the kingdom, so when he was witnessing or testifying or teaching Zacchaeus, then obviously he knew that this was available. This is what he was teaching to them. But Zacchaeus had to make the decision himself.
Yeah.
There wasn't any kind of hocus pocus or born again,
no magic
or anything. No.
Zacchaeus had to come clean.
That line, salvation is yours today, that's the key.
Yeah. Really. I put down much as Phil. Jesus cared about all people, even a sniveling idiot like Zacchaeus.
Right.
You know, who had really, he was at the bottom of the bottom.
Yeah.
And a lot of people's.
Zacchaeus knew what people thought of him.
Yeah.
Now here is a man who asks to come into his home. Now that's a private, personal, tender kind of thing. And of course the breaking of bread. And and here is a man actually wants to come and eat with me and sit and visit with me.
Treat me as a friend.
Yes, yes. And I think it surely must have broken down and opened up Zacchaeus, in a manner of speaking, if you know what I mean. And I just want to add one thing. I think one of the great things that I regret today, I'm a retired pastor, is how little pastors can get into people's homes.
To break bread.
And I think and to sit down, even if you don't break bread, you always get a cup of coffee or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I think that is an ideal place.
Yep,
that's where you live.
Over the kitchen table.
That's your castle.
It's so hard to do that.
Yeah.
But anyhow, that's my.
But it's not very acceptable to invite yourself.
Well, no.
No.
Which I used to do.
Yeah.
Well, I came out in '60 as a pastor, and in those days, you could walk up and knock on a house and get right in.
No.
You really could? Yes, you could. In '60.
Yeah.
You know, the 1960s. Mm-hmm. But there's no direct time, but slowly but gradually, that's eroding. Yeah. Now you go to a home and you call first.
Mm-hmm.
That's only polite. You know? Mm-hmm. So I agree with you there. The fact that Jesus said, I want to come to your house and have dinner.
Yeah.
Wow.
My wife used to get on me for going to somebody's house without calling them.
I said, well...
Everybody eats up now.
Well, they wouldn't have everything cleaned up, you know, from the past.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to play Zacchaeus on the piano now. I think you all know it, so we don't need a lyricist. This is a self-affirming group, right? And I thought we couldn't pass up Zacchaeus without the Zacchaeus song. Here we go. And he said, Zacchaeus, you come down. Would know the Zacchaeus song, no. But oh, that's all right.
For I'm coming to your house.
We're coming to, I'm coming, Zacchaeus, you come down, for I'm going to your house today. I'm going to your house today.
Oh, I was coming to your house for tea, and I thought that was only the poor Lutheran.
coffee. See, there's motions. Zacchaeus was a wee little man was he. He climbed up in the sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see. And as the Savior passed that way, he looked up in the tree and he said, Zacchaeus, you come down, for I'm going to your house today, for I'm going to your house today. I've taught that since so many Bible schools, you know. Have you seen the book, Practicing Your Faith?
Yes, we're using it this
week. Can you think of some of the themes that come out of that book that would be in Zacchaeus, light of Zacchaeus? One is the show of mercy. Jesus showed mercy to Zacchaeus, you know. He could have passed him by and said, oh, he's nothing but a publican. Let's forget him. And offer hospitality is another thing.
Yeah. Right. And the saying yes, saying no, what decisions do you make?
Yeah. And I think, I put it in my monologue, but I think Zacchaeus had all kinds of insights. He had to from that moment. You know, it's hard to exhaust them, but...
I think Zacchaeus was a miserable little man, even with all his riches.
Oh.
Because, I mean, he lived with rejection.
Sure.
He was rejected in the weird story of all his classmates, because he was, not classmates, but the bullies.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that he was small, and he really... Small boys just don't get along well in school,
that's
period.
True. They don't.
And so he was rejected by his peer group. He was rejected by his parents. They wouldn't have anything to do with him. And all he had were these people that were of kind around him, thieves, if you will. And he was suffering immensely for the human touch. And Christ came into his life with a human touch, and he just melted because he still had conscience.
Yeah.
And Christ filled that need of rejection. He was no longer rejected by Christ anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, in case you're interested, I put my monologues together in a book, and it's two volumes, and I have 16 monologues and 3 dialogues, and it's in this book. It's called, what is it called? God's Faithful, Telling the Story, and I've got it published, and if you're interested, you can let me know, and I think I'll have a copy for you.
All right.
You can...
Is a bookstore handling them, Gene, or are you?
Pardon me?
Is a bookstore handling the sale of those? Or
no, I'm handling myself at this point.
All right, so you're the tax collector? You're the money collector?
I am the money collector. Now, I'm going to close, and I'm asking you, what's one thing you might remember from this Bible study today?
You look good in the outfit.
Oh, come on.
You look good.
Thank you.
My thought would be, win or lose with Jesus, you win.
Yeah.
I like that because I think that's true of the faith. Win or lose, you win.
Yep.
When you're on the Lord's side.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Another thing is that don't ever give up on someone who is not perhaps the popular person, the outstanding person, or the ethical, honest person.
Exactly. Thank you, Laura. Good point.
Mm-hmm.
Another one I have, it's never too late.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you think it's too late, then it is.
Yeah, then you close.
But if you don't think it's too late, it's never too late. When did Grandma Moses start painting?
90.
Was it? I thought it was 80.
80s,
I think. She painted until she was 90.
Early. I'm trying to think of Verdi wrote some of his best operas when he was over 90.
Yeah.
Who was it? Finlandia wrote.
Sibelius.
Sibelius wrote Finlandia when he was over 90.
Did he really?
Yeah. And Gladstone was Prime Minister of England when he was 92 years old. Yeah.
Just goes to show.
Yeah, Baruch, there's another good one.
Right. It's never too late. Anybody else? One last parting thought. We're going to quit. Well, thanks for coming, everybody. Let's close with a word of prayer, shall we? Lord, we thank you that you are the kind of Lord and Savior that indeed it's never too late. We've all had days, as we look back in our stories, when things were not easy, when things almost were threatening to fall apart, like for our friend Zacchaeus. We need to be reminded that with you, Jesus, your love, your salvation, your caring for us of the deep compassion, it is really very true. It's never, never too late. Let us take that with us today and be overjoyed that we belong to you and faith is a part of our journey and our walk. Be with us now as we go forward to the rest of this day. We ask you, Lord, in your wonderful name. Amen.
Amen.
Thanks for coming, everybody.
Yeah.
Good to see you.